On this episode of Domestic Dad Cleaning Up the Mess, we're going to talk about personal growth. I sat down with DeAndre Sip the Kid Smith. We had a conversation about what it was like to grow up without a real father in your life. He walks me through his progression into parenthood as he, at an early age, took on the role of provider, not only for his brothers, but also his mother. Then what it was like becoming a father for the first time to two stepchildren, and the family dynamic that is the paradigm of a blended family in today's world. Then in 2018, when he lost his brother and his mother, both to gun violence. As a result, he was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, and now he deals with that every day. And still, he's been able to have an active role as a father and build a successful career in acting. We packed a ton into this one, you guys. So grab a mop, because we're cleaning up the mess. Has life gotten off track? Are you looking for some inspiration to be a better dad? People say all the time, I'd die for my kids. Okay, but would you live for them? Actually live, get yourself healthy, make better choices, eliminate distractions? Would you lead them more intentionally? Would you get sober? Take better care of yourself, physically and mentally. You'd only have to die once. Your kids don't need you to die for them. They need you to live. Have you thought about getting sober, but you just didn't know where to start? If so, welcome to the Domestic Dad Podcast, your go-to destination for candid discussions on journeys into sobriety, parenting, and personal growth. I'm Nick Barnett, founder of the Domestic Dad Project. I've been a dad since I was 18 years old. I'm also a trauma survivor, an alcoholic, divorced, happily remarried, hardworking, humbled by life, domestic dad. On this podcast, you'll find interviews with people who have walked that path, including myself, coaches, mentors, and pastors who can help guide you on your journey. You're going to need resources and inspiration. You can find that here. This is the community for you to lean into so you can start living life as a domestic dad. So let's grab a mop and start cleaning up the mess. What's up, man?
What's up, man? How you doing, man?
I'm good.
It's good to hear you, man.
Yeah. While this podcast does speak to journeys into sobriety, It also speaks to personal growth and parenting.
Yeah.
And as a father of six
plus a dog.
Yeah. I think that we'll have some good talking points today. DeAndre, go ahead and just start with childhood, man. Tell me about your journey.
Childhood, man. I grew up without a dad, no dad around, single mom. A lot of time, my mom didn't work. A lot of times I was the man of the house. I think I was like 13 or 14. I got my first job, got a work permit. I think my first job was KLC.
Yeah.
And going to school, man. And ever since then, I was working at Harvey and KLC together. And ever since I was like 13 to 14, yep, I got a work permit. And I've been taking care of my mom and two younger brothers since I was younger. And then I just built a crazy work ethic and things like that. Yeah, it just wasn't around. Just kind of in and out. But it's almost, and I don't even want to, I like to tell people there's a difference between like negativity and truthful. Like negativity, yeah. If I say he's a deadbeat, truthful saying he wasn't there. And he only lived like in Cedar Rapids, and we lived in Waterloo, so he never came to see us. So people would tell us, I remember family members would say, we just seen your dad, and we just seen your
great.
We just seen your dad. Like, he didn't come see us, so it was things like, then part of my life, I think from like maybe 4 or 5 to middle school, we lived in Mississippi, so that's a big chunk he didn't see or talk to us. But we moved from Mississippi, we moved back.
Did you ever go visit him down there?
Yeah, we went to Cedar Rapids. It was times where we lived in Waterloo. We're living in Waterloo, but we had family in Mississippi. So every summer, we was given the choice to go to Mississippi or stay here with our dad. But we stayed here. But when we was there, he treated us, like I said, not negative. He treated us like stepkids, man. He didn't really care for us or anything. Even when I was working down there, I was sweeping hair in a barbershop to make my own money to buy my own school clothes. And right. I remember times he would get mad because he didn't want to give me a ride to work. So I used to ride a bike. I don't know how many miles. I'm talking about across Cedar Rapids, like from Hiawatha to Cedar Rapids on a bike to go work to make my own money for school and things like that. So it was one of the things, almost just an announcement. When we was around him, he didn't acknowledge us. Some people do things just to say I did it. Like, no, I still raised myself. He didn't do anything. I became closer. I'm closer with his ex-girlfriend at the time. I still talk to her more than him because I made like second family. Like after going down there so many summers, like I said, like we wasn't, because Mississippi was like, we don't want to go to Mississippi, it's boring. I went down there, you made friends. you make friends, you meet girls and stuff. So you, yeah, it was a hype to go down there, but not negatively to say, but not to see him though. Like I said, it's like we wasn't even there. So we was hyped to go see friends and stuff we made down there and make money too. That's another thing. When I went to Mississippi, I wasn't able to make the money. So the money I made working in Cedar Rapids, that's how I had clothes and shoes for me to go to school and my brothers to go to school. And that's another thing too. Like on my dad's side, I got like 8-10 siblings. Like when we went down to Cedar Rapids, that's another thing that keep in the back of my mind. Cause like when we went down there, it was like a daughter and a son. I had a brother and sister that lived with him and his girlfriend, and they got things and me and my brother
didn't.
Yeah, we didn't. So that sticks in my head. I remember times when my sister's the same. You're not my brother, and my dad, that's what sent stuff like that. It was people saying to me, like, your dad say y'all not his and stuff like that. So, like, things like that play in my head all the time. Even used to go down there, that sticks with your bond, you know, them things and stuff. Like, it still goes on, you know. Like,
I cannot imagine. That sounds traumatic as hell, yeah. To be honest with you. And in those moments, I think as little kids, we're very repellent of those things in the mm-hmm. moment. But today, little things like that can come back.
Yeah.
You know, as you move through childhood, a lot of those things pop up in a way that have you searching for who you are.
Yeah.
I think the best way to describe it would be insecurity. Or did you harden up because of it?
I think I hardened up because I think what my situation, what I thank God for, is because I came to man of the house, because my mom wasn't like, my mom had one eye. So like she didn't get a disability. Nobody would hire her. So we're trying to survive off like Section 8 and stuff. You know, because I came to man of the house early, I think I had an old soul, so I was mature enough, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I was old enough to where, because I was never bitter about it, still not. So I think that was God's way of protecting me. Because I became the man of house early, that I already had a mindset of, like, I got to take care. I'm team mom, basically. I'm like, whatever you want to do, that's you. Like, so I think God protected me, and I had an armor already. It does make me a great dad today. Everything I think about that he did, I always tell myself, like, I got to make sure I don't do that with my kids, though.
Yeah,
man. So I think it made me grow up. It definitely made me grow up faster.
What came next for you?
Next after that, just went through life, still raising mom. I mean, raising my brothers and the mom. And then this college and stuff. And even at home, too, like I say, too. Even at home got crazy, too, with my brothers and my mom. Because I didn't have a dad. Back to what you're saying. I guess it makes sense. Because I didn't have a dad, it kind of made my home structure weird with my mom and brothers. Because to my brothers, I couldn't be a brother. I was a brother dad. You see what I mean? Because I was.
Yeah, they went to you for advice. They went to you for money, fatherly things.
So
money.
Yeah. And then with my mom too. So it was a lot of pressure on me. So that did like that. That made my dynamic at home like very like a lot of pressure on me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sheesh, man. So what was school like for you?
School was good, man. School. Man, I was one of those people that went to school every day. I enjoyed school, man. I went to school. It was fun because I was making my own money. I was a popular guy in school, like making people laugh. Yeah, man. So school was fun. I didn't have a problem socializing or anything. So that's why I think all that prepared me for now. Like, I love socializing. So I didn't have a problem with school or anything.
Did you go to college?
Yep, I went to college. I got an associate degree. I went to Hawkeye. I met my wife. So I used to do music. I used to rap. So she's a backup dancer. So at the County Congress, the fair, the carnival.
Yeah.
I performed there. I had to do a concert there. And she was a backup dancer. And ever since then, I remember September 2012. And ever since then, we've been together ever since then. So her since 2012. In high school, I was all over the place in high school, but working and stuff, being the man in the house. But 2012, I met my wife too. And the thing with my mom too, I will say, I wasn't, my choice to become the man of the house is like, I seen something that made my mind like snap. I seen what happened was with that situation when I came to man in the house, to go back to this. So I remember the first day of middle school, I went to Century Middle School. We didn't have any new clothes or anything. My mom couldn't afford it. And I remember she poured a bag of clothes out on the floor. Because she had to wash our clothes. Because, you know how people get new clothes for school? We didn't have that. She pulled some clothes out of the trash bag. And she started crying. She didn't tell me why, but I knew why. Because she couldn't buy us new clothes. And that's when, from that moment on, I had something in my brain just tweaked and snapped, man. And that's why I became the man of the house.
Got to get money.
Yeah, we got to get that money, man. Yeah.
What did work look like for you?
I did some of everything. While I was in college, I went to school for CNC machining. So while I was in college, I was doing CNC machining. So my whole college years, 18... I was 2 years, so I graduated when I was 21. 18 to 21, I graduated high school in May, and in August, I didn't even give myself a break. I graduated in May, and in August, so a couple of months later, I was back in the desk. So I was, from 18 to 21, I was buckled down, man. I was busy. I would go to school 7 to 3, and then I would go work second shift. It was like a scholarship program. If I worked for them, they'd pay for my schooling. So I would go to work from, I go to school from 7 to 3, and then from 3 to 11 to 12 at night, I was at work. So then and then luckily, because the CNC machine, there's not a lot of classroom work. There's a lot of in on hands things. So like I didn't have to. But yeah, man, I was busy. It was like Monday through Friday, like 7 to 3, and then I would go to work after that. So my those couple of years, I definitely sacrificed like a lot of time, but it taught me work ethic. You know what I mean? So it taught me work ethic.
Yeah. When did you find the woman?
Oh yeah. So the thing with my wife is, I met her, and like I said, I was doing 21. I graduated actually in 22. I graduated in 22. Like I said, I was doing music, and then she was a backup dancer for like when I was doing music, and we had a concert together. She was a backup dancer, and then the night of the concert, we just hung out, and ever since then, we've been together since then. So
really?
So she was a backup dancer. I was rapping for like doing a concert, and ever since then, we've been together. It wasn't like I seen her around or nothing like that. I met her through a mutual friend that said she a good dancer. When she danced for our concert, and that was it, man. I didn't see her around in high school because she's older than me, so it was one of them things. Like,
how much older?
Oh, she's 34. I'm 32, so not.
Oh, okay.
Not too. Not 45 or nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's how it happened, though. I didn't see her around then. Had a rap concert. I used to rap. Met her through that. Practiced a couple times, and then from there on, it happened, man.
Where did your rap career take you?
Nowhere. Because the reason I started acting because I felt like my rap career wasn't going anywhere. I felt like very local with it. And I think another reason I stopped doing it too because of the dependency of it. Now it's cool because everybody got, you can go on the internet and learn how to become a producer and things like that. But sure. I feel like dependency. I had to call people for studio time. Sometimes they wouldn't answer. I needed to get a video shot. Sometimes you didn't even have the money to pay for a video person. I think a lot of times it was a lot of stuff like that kind of holding me back. But I just felt very local and I just felt out of love with it.
So you just, spoiler alert, you're on a Netflix TV show. You met your, like, I understand, like, childhood and all that stuff and growing up and how you met your wife and what life was like growing up with you, providing for your brothers and sisters and taking care of everybody in your house. So you have this immense responsibility on you to your family. You've been going to school and you decide to leave the house and take it, like, pour into this woman. And then at some point you had kids.
I had my first kid when I was 21, so we had kids.
I have nothing but boys, so I have to know, is it true that the little girls wrap you around their finger?
Oh, they do, man. They definitely, I call it a sympathy thing, because I feel like with boys, you
can be hard.
Like with girls, I call it a sympathy game. You just feel sorry for them all the time, so they definitely got me wrapped around their fingers,
So how many boys do you have?
Two stepboys.
So your wife has children from before your marriage?
And then one on the way, so.
I have questions.
It's all good, man. I love the questions, man. Hey.
So I'll just start because I've never been a step parent, and I'm so intrigued by this. And I talk to my wife about it all the time because she has. So I have three kids. One of them is 21 years old. One of them is 12 years old. He was like 3 or 4 when my wife and I met. And I have a 4-year-old now. And she's always been, I really just got to give it up to my wife, man. She's like one of the best people I've ever met in my entire life.
It's a hard, and not to cut you off, but it's a, man, like, and it's a hard thing to do. I tell people being a step-parent is probably one of the hardest things. Like, because like understanding, because I don't think of understanding, like, it's a hard thing, man, to do.
You want to unpack that a little bit? What's hard about it? Because I think that's an important piece of who you've become.
I think it's hard because I feel like you deal with stuff that you don't have to, and you stay around. I think that's stay in your head. For instance, kids acting up, party, I don't even have to be here. But you can't, sticking it out is hard, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Because it's easy to run away, so that makes it harder. Also, in my case, sometimes the consistency, or finding myself trying not to feel like I'm wasting energy. Like, I tell my son to do something, his mom, but no. So it's like, sometimes I feel like they brain conflicted, like, they never said like
brand conflicted. Yeah, that's a good term.
Because they never said like, you're not my dad, but it's, I'm like, it, I know like part of them thinking like, you're not my dad. So it's stuff like that makes it hard, man.
I talk about reactions that don't need words to be said, and you can almost see it. And that's one of them, right? Like, I can see it sometimes with my son, how he responds to my wife. Sometimes it goes in one ear and out the other. But if I say it, it's instant eye contact. And I'm like, man, I wish like you would just pay a little bit closer.
And that's exactly what I'm talking about. And you can feel that. And then, like I said, I don't know if your wife never said it. It's one of the things. It's just a thought always. Because it's like, it's easier to run away. It's easier to be like, I don't want to deal with this. Because, you know what I mean? Or just stuff like that. Like getting it. The kids, stuff happens. Sometimes you get stressed out. And it's like, do I continue to stress out about somebody else's kids, and it sucks to think like that, but yeah, when you love someone, you stick it out. But it's things like, it's simple things like that make it hard. Being stressed out for someone else's kids, and you're like, do I really have to deal with this?
Listen, what you just said right there is that it's dealing with it is hard. Yeah. It's not hard for people who don't care.
Yeah.
The fact that you care enough to know inside of you that it's something that you like, you want to make right, you want to do the right way. Mm-hmm. And that's difficult. If it wasn't difficult, it wouldn't be important. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I want to give it up to you as a step parent in that regard, because I think your heart is in the right place. And at some point, they probably already do have a great relationship with you.
Yeah.
But I have a fantastic relationship with my stepdad.
Yeah. No, we have a great relationship. No, like, we definitely, like, they listen to me. They respect me and things. Like, they definitely respect. You got to think about it. I've been with my wife since 2012. So they was like 2 and 3. For instance, with that, like, I was raising somebody else's kids before my kids was born. That's what I mean. Things like, oh, so they older than my, you got
a longer connection with them.
Yeah. So, like, my oldest stepson is like 16 and one is 14. So they was here before. You got to think about it. See what I mean? Like, I was raising them. I didn't have kids yet. That's what I think, like, stage. I don't even have my kids yet.
How old were you when you became a step parent?
So I would have been, because I didn't have my daughter yet. I had my daughter when I was 21 and I met my wife when I was 21. So yeah. That's, and plus, it's like an unwritten rule. It's something you never don't think about. Like, step-parents don't get enough credit. Like,
they don't.
Because, like, you really are dealing with
it. The good ones don't.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say it. The good ones do not. Yeah. Show me a step-parent who has a great relationship with their stepson or daughter, and I'll give them a hug. Because raising somebody else's kids, co-parenting mm-hmm. with somebody else's kids, is one of the hardest things to do in the entire world.
Yeah.
It just is. Because you have to go up again, and I don't know what role their father has in their lives, and we can talk about that if you want, but mm-hmm. My wife is a great step parent mm-hmm. and it's hard when it's somebody else. Like when you have to compete with somebody else for the role of a parent.
Yeah. This is a weird thing. Cause you like, and also do I do this? Do I overstep? So it's always like,
how hard do I need to be?
Yes. Cause it's literally one of the things where you have to think like every time before you act, like even, and I tell the difference is like with my kids, if I tell my kid to sit down and my wife, like my actual daughter sit down and my wife say, get up. I look at them like, listen, I like, because the difference is you listen to me. With the step kid, if she said get up, and then you like, do I argue over this? It's like a weird
thing. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a weird thing. Yeah, man. It's crazy, man. Like, being a step, like, it is, man. It's one of them things, like, I wish I could, like talk to other people about it. Like I said, I think a lot of times it's dealing with stuff.
And I think, honestly, man, I think that's the whole point here is to, like, actually start having these types of conversations. Me and you didn't sit here and decide that we were going to talk about being step parents today. I have no basis in what that looks like mm-hmm. except for to see it from my wife's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You do, and I think that it's worth talking about.
It definitely is, man.
Navigating that is hard.
Yeah, you definitely have to be strong. You gotta just have to stick it out. You definitely gotta be strong.
And you gotta stay on the team, right?
Yeah.
You gotta stay on the team, whether that's on your wife's team or there's the other person that is also a parent in that situation mm-hmm. as well. The other father, the other mother that you have to stay on the team with.
Yeah, yeah. That's a hard part too. They dads are, they're not in their life, but they come in and that's another thing that messes with them. So, and it's just honestly, like they dads are not in their lives. Like they dad, like one of the oldest one, haven't seen his dad probably been years. And then the youngest one, his dad might pick him up today. And he might not pick him up again until December. And just Christmas just passes up, didn't call him. No gifts. It's not to be, it's the truth. Like I said, it wasn't not there or anything. And then what will happen with situations like that is sometimes it's just weird. Like, I don't get in. I tell them all the time, like, I would never stop you from seeing your dad. But you know what I mean? Like, being a man and raising kids and seeing how it is, you try not to judge if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So that gets hard too because they are not there. Like, try to be respectful for the kids, but you're like, no.
You have to go to the serenity prayer over that one.
Yeah.
Like, I can only control what I can control.
Yeah.
And I need to have the wisdom to know what I can and what I can't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because in those situations, those are just hard. That's just difficult.
Yeah. And also I learned too, it's up to the kid. I think I learned at a young age, like having kids, even if they want to talk to them or not, or never talk to them, the kid can, you know, the kid know the truth. You know what I mean? That's all I always say. The kid know the truth, you know?
Yeah.
Because if I end up saying something to them or even trying to fight, there's no reason. The kid know who's there and who's not. So I let the universe and God deal with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's important, man. We just went down a whole rabbit hole, didn't we?
Oh, man, we need to talk about that.
Yeah. I think that's just a relevant conversation to have when it comes down to parenting. People only see it as, oh, you're parenting your children, and this is how you should parent your children. When you're a step parent, you don't have as much control. It's almost like you're just giving the wheel to your partner, and you have to support your partner in that.
That's basically what it is. You're giving your partner the, yep, that's basically, that you just explained it in a perfect way. You're giving your partner the wheel, and you just support with your own kids. It's more
even if you want to be like, no.
I'm gonna grab the steering wheel sometimes.
You're gonna crack.
Sometimes I gotta stand there and be like, we got insurance. So but I love it. Yeah, man. But yeah, I think that helped too, though. And that's another thing I think helped my situation too, or like your wife. I raised them since they was like 2 and 3. So
yeah,
I've been there a long time. Just on your whole life almost. So
yeah, that's good, man.
Yeah, man.
All right, so you have 2 step sons, and then you had your daughter, and then there's three more?
You have 3 daughters. I got 3 daughters.
3 daughters. Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah, man.
How old?
I was 11. That's how I tried to go in order. Like, I think, and then the birthday's always coming. 11, no, 6, 6, 9, and 11. Yeah. I do it all the time because the birthday's coming. The age change. 6, 9, and 11. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, 6, 9, so 5 years. 5 years apart, max.
Not anymore within those.
Yeah.
I know, man.
How old is your oldest stepson?
16.
16.
Yep.
So from 16 to a baby.
A baby, yeah. So newborn.
Do I need to edit that out? Have you guys talked about that?
Oh, no, yeah, we talked about it. All
right. I didn't know if you announced a baby announcement coming over. Like, hey, on the Domestic Dad podcast, I announced my birth of my next child.
You want to know if people know? We really haven't we told some people in the family, but no, it's cool, man. I'm glad to share this with you.
So, all right. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Cool. All right. So we talked about trauma. We talked about just some things that you have been through in your life. Do you want to get into some of that stuff?
Yeah.
And when that happened?
Yeah, 2018, younger brother. I had a younger brother hung with the wrong crowd. Yeah, it's all on the news. This made like Fox and stuff. And I actually just went to trial for it, I think a year or two ago, because they had finally convicted the guy. But brother hung with some people, riding in the truck with some people. They did a drive-by. Somebody died. My brother went to jail. He was acquitted, so he didn't get charged for murder.
How old was he?
I think he was like 21 when he died. Got acquitted of murder, but the streets, so the streets wasn't having it. So one of the guys that got killed by the drive-by, his brother started dating my cousin, and the whole time he was setting up a plot to kill my brother. So my brother started hanging out with our cousin because it was close, but the whole time he was using that, and they killed him, and we found him in the alley. So 2018, May 31st, we found my younger brother in the alley. He got killed like 2 or 3 in the morning. And we didn't find him until it's probably like the next morning. So his body laid there all night and stuff. I think about stuff like that. And fast forward, that was May 31st. And then September 10th, 2018, my mom got killed in the drive-by. And
Related or no?
Yep, yeah, related. Yeah, all that stuff is still related. But that situation, a lot of people think my mom was just the target. What happened was she was killed by accident. Some of my brother friends was retaliating against his murder. And what they did was they went ahead at her house. And they came looking for the people, and she just so happened to get shot because they was looking for the other people. My brother friends retaliated, ran to her house, and they shot my mom's house looking for my brother friends, but she so happened to got killed and died right in front of me. So
right in front of you?
Oh, yeah, in front of me. Yeah, she died in front of me and my middle brother. Yeah, and that's people understand. It wasn't like we got to the hospital. No, this was she got shot, in front of me. She died right away and everything like that. She got... I don't want to get too graphic, but shot in the nose, like brains just blew out in the back of her head and things like that. Yeah. And this is like me seeing that. And I remember the next day, me and my wife, and that's why I love my wife and I credit her so much. We had to clean up my mom's brains and stuff the next day. So she died like right away. The autopsy got me being the oldest. And that's another pressure on me. When my brother died, my youngest brother died. It's my mom's baby. So I'm putting together the funeral. I'm doing everything. And then when my mom died, the same thing. So seeing all that stuff close and stuff like that. My mom passed in front of me.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You got with your faith.
I'm very strong with my faith. This is where I tell people, I think when I think about in hindsight, my life, the work ethic, even my dad not being there, I think God somehow prepared. I tell people, I think I was prepared for this. I know it sounds crazy because I became the man early, taking care of my kids, taking care of my mom. Then by the time my mom and brother died, I was independent enough to where I almost didn't need her. So I think like God was like, you're going to be okay almost. Because if I wouldn't have that foundation of being the man I was growing up, I probably would have fell apart. And then I had to take care of my middle brother. Because when he was living with my mom at the time when she passed and he didn't want to go to the house, and he didn't want to live in the house. She died in the house and stuff like that. So I had to take care of him. So I think I was at a point in my life where I was able to take care of my brother and my family and move along. But my faith has always been strong, but I think my life really prepared me for that moment. I know it sounds probably crazy, but without that foundation of years, all that stuff happening, I wouldn't probably be able to handle it.
I think God had his hands on you your entire life, preparing you for what you would eventually have to take on.
Yeah. Diagnosed with PTSD and major depression disorder. So
talk to me about that, man. Tell me what you went through regarding that, like post all this stuff, because I'm sure that wasn't easy.
Oh, it wasn't easy, man. It's still not easy, man. Like depression, I still get depressed around like holidays. And that's the thing too with depression and stuff. That's such a hard thing because I try not to be selfish about it. So for instance, like my mom's birthday is Valentine's. For a long time, I had to like, and my wife, that's why I credit her for being understanding. I celebrate my mom, but not, I got to share it with my wife. I can't be selfish. So
Yeah, I bet that's difficult for you because you're trying to love on your wife, but you're also
trying not to
in memoriam for your mom.
Yeah. And it's still hard. And the PTSD, that's definitely hard because the way they die, like shooting and stuff like that, I still like, it bothered me all the time, man. I tell people, you ever been in an argument or a fight, the adrenaline you get, I get that all the time.
Yeah.
I can be, it can be a guy in my neighborhood delivering food, driving slow, and like, I get the emotions of, oh, shoot, you know what I mean? I'm going to have to. Yeah, and this is what I said, to this day, I still get like that. So the PTSD always happens. There's certain things, like somebody can be minding their business, but acting awkward. My body is like, yeah, it reacts like they're trying to do something. Yeah, you know what I mean?
That's so, that gut reaction that has no words to it. It's just, I'm reacting to this.
Yeah, and because of the way they die from like shooting and stuff like that. Yeah, so.
I've talked to a lot of people about PTSD, and a lot of times how it's described to me is falling. Like the ground comes out from underneath you and it's, oh my God, like it's just such a jolt.
Yeah, it is, man. I think the hardest thing is I tell people about it's like your body reacts. It reacts like it's happening again. That's why I think the biggest thing is like, I think people don't talk about it enough. Like with PTSD, your body reacts like it's in the situation. You know, and like I tell you, like if you could order food right now and someone can be driving by like with no sign trying to look for the address to you, you'd be like, oh, he's right here. I'm probably like shaking and ready to fight. You see, my body's okay. It's like somebody follow me is to drive by time again. So I think that's the thing I think a lot of people don't talk about. I think the thoughts is there, but a lot of times people don't talk about the way your body reacts. Like it actually reacts like that situation is happening again. So I don't think that people talk about that enough. So you think about it or something happened, your body's like immediately started to act like it's happening again. So you get the emotions, you get the feeling or everything happening again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How have you dealt with that in your adult life as a parent now, right? Because you've been a parent your entire life. Yeah. Let's just be real about that.
Yeah.
You have been parenting since you've been a young man, maybe even before you would consider yourself a man. Yep. have been, as a boy, you were parenting. Yeah. So how do you deal with that? Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
How do you go dealing with this PTSD and with the trauma that you had experienced and haven't people ripped out of your life?
Yeah. I tell people the first thing is like, my wife and kids saved my life, man. You got to think about it. I tell people all the time, my wife and kids, like, they actually did, because I think before I react, because people don't understand, like, I'm the oldest. There's so many pressures I'm going to talk about. My mom and brother didn't die from cancer. They died from the hands of other humans. So you got to think about it. In the streets, once people in my ear, like, what you going to do? You going to get them back? That's there. You know what I mean? But because of my wife and kids, I think about if I do this or that, I'm not going to be around and think about them. So I think I credit a lot of my wife and kids. I know that sounds like cliche, but I think about everything. Because if I could kill someone and go to prison, who's going to protect them and stuff like that? A lot of things I credit too is just working out too, man. I go to the gym, tying to myself. I think a lot of people understand, got down to the science of it. Like the same chemicals that drinking and drugs give you, if you can get yourself a jog or something, you can release some of them chemicals. Cry, the same chemicals. A lot of that stuff is just brain related. So if you cry, I guarantee if you cry, you feel better because you release the chemicals out your head and working out. All that stuff is like the chemicals is in your brain, you releases them. So I think working out, my kids, and like I said, the faith and stuff, it's almost, man, it's crazy to sound like a more realistic way too. I'd be like, this might sound crazy, but it's like, I'd be like, we all gonna die in one day anyway. It sucks to think like that, but that kind of helps me.
No, man, hard things are gonna happen in this world. They are going to happen, whether you lead a life of sobriety, a life of the perfect parent, no matter what you do in your life, bad things are going to happen to you and to people around you. And you're going to have to deal with them in some way, shape, or form. Yeah. And if you, and this is just for me from a, on a personal level, I learned, it took me a long time to fall forward into this salute, into this conclusion. But if I'm drinking or whatever, and something bad happens to me, it's a lot worse than if I'm sober and something bad happens to me. Mm-hmm. And to your point, if you're working out and something bad happens, when I first got sober, I would run a lot. Mm-hmm. And oh my gosh, I would run. I was happy. I'm just fulfilled. Yeah, yeah. But then I would walk back to my house. In that walk back, I'll just start crying, man.
Yeah.
I would start thinking about all the things that had been bottled up inside of me that I tried to sedate with alcohol over the years, and they would all come out, and I'd just be like, oh, that's hard. But by the time I got to my front door every day, I was like, I can go conquer whatever it is in the world that I need to conquer, because I've already done the hard thing today, and that's dealing with what's inside of me.
Yeah. And I think that's a big part of it. I think it's, I think dealing with it, I think a lot of depression and things is like just dealing with it. Like the fact that you cried or worked, like you talked it out, whatever you did, I think you dealt with it. Because imagine if you went through that for 2 weeks and didn't deal with it. You're either going to blow up, you know what I mean? I think you just deal with it. That's why I think I credit to like just me, like dealing with it. And like saying, having a close faith and stuff. But it's have been hard though, man. That's a lot of times like, oh, I hit the why God, why me? Like a lot of times.
Yeah. That victim mentality.
Yeah. But with mine, I go back to when I was younger because I like, okay. Because I'm like, because I'd be like, well, I never got a break. Like I took care of my mom and brothers. I had a kid. Guess what I'm doing? Taking care of somebody else. I got a wife and kids. Even back to the stepdad thing. I'm taking care of somebody else's kids. Like, so like, I'm always taking care of doing something. Then my mom and brother passed. It's like another thing. It's like my whole life, I'm like, it's not like a complaining man, but it's like my whole life, I'm like just taking care of since I was younger.
There was so many times in my 20s and even early 30s where I would be like, man, I didn't get to go do the fun thing. I had something going on this night of the week when everybody was going out. I couldn't go do it. And I was always had that like little built-in FOMO. I don't know what I would even call it. It was something though. There was something to it. Today, not many people get to live the life I get to live.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I have a great wife. I have great kids. I'm expanding my community with people like yourself and others that are on a similar journey and path. Yeah. I get to wrap my arms around brothers and other people that are like, that's the life right there.
It made us who we are, man. That's why I said, I think about it. It made us be strong, man. If we wouldn't went through none of that, you might not be able to handle any of this. It made us who we are. So we definitely warriors. So I think it made us who we are. Definitely, man.
Domestic dads.
Yeah. Domestic dads. I like the way it sounds.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of that is showing up for your partner too, right? Yeah. Or whoever it is that you're in a relationship with, showing up and being present in that relationship and sharing not just the burden, but also the good things in parenting, right?
Yeah.
Being able to be a good partner and take on, I'm going to vacuum tonight for you, hon. Are you putting away the dishes? I'm going to mop the floor. Yep. You know what I mean? Yeah. You need me to go pick up the kids from daycare? I got that. You know what I mean? Yeah. We'll divide and conquer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Taking on some of those responsibilities and being able to do that and being trusted to do that. I think that at the end of the day is what being a domestic dad is really all about. And it just takes, you got to do the work to get your mind.
Yeah, you definitely do. Yeah.
In order to be present in those moments for your children.
Yeah. No, you definitely do. Yeah, you're right about everything, man. So you definitely do. And like you said, being there, splitting everything with your partner is definitely a big part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Babe, I can do 70% today. You only have to do 30. But tomorrow I'm going to do 25. And you're going to do 75. All right, man. So what's your favorite part about being a dad?
I don't have to leave the house. I got a best friend. No, I think my best part is like, I sound a little selfish, but I like being a hero. Like when my kids say, hey, I need something. It's like, hey, man, I'm here to save the day. It sounds like a selfish thing, but I just enjoy like seeing them happy and stuff. So I think I just love being around them. It's just everything about them. I think the purpose they give me though, because like without them, I probably would have committed suicide without them. You know what I mean? So many things, but they give me purpose. Waking up, having a good time, they make me smile. So the purpose they give me.
Yeah.
What about you?
Man, I say this all the time, but my favorite thing is when I take myself out of being the advice dad. I struggle with that sometimes. Not to answer the question here. I'm going to answer that question, but I think I have to establish like the other side of it. I struggle with being the advice dad sometimes. Mm-hmm. I struggle with my 21-year-old and my 12-year-old and my, not so much my 4-year-old because he's still just like little and he's growing into the person that he's going to be. Mm-hmm. But with my 12-year-old, I find that it's really important for me to interject and tell him like mm-hmm. all these like different things on how, like what he should do and how he should handle this and all that. And sometimes I forget that what he really needs is somebody just to encourage him, just to be present, create some space for him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When he's, hey, Dad, you want to play catch? Yeah, I'm going to play catch with you. So I enjoyed those moments the most when I stop and get out of trying to parent them. Yeah,
I know, right. I know exactly what you mean. I just have to figure it out too. More support rather than mold. You know what I mean? Because you're trying to like make, you know what I mean? Like,
at least I stop trying to shape you and I just enjoy who you are and watch you play.
Yeah.
I just watch it. Like when they're out there doing their thing and they're in their moment and they're not looking at me over their shoulder, like my dad's going to get mad if I do this. My dad's going to get mad if I do that. Yeah. There's more of a, like, they're just being them. I think those moments right there are my favorite moments of parenting.
Yeah.
And I've been, alcohol for me would always put like a dimmed that part of it, because I was always trying to like course correct or do things for him. And then I just wasn't a great parent while I was drinking. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's been this wave of, I actually get to communicate with other people about my child in very good and positive ways. And I get to watch my sons flourish a little bit. It's like seeing the fruits of your labor, man. Yeah. I think that's my favorite part about being a dad, is watching them be good people when they do cool stuff.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. That's why I said, like, this, they give me purpose. And my best friend, like I said, same thing, man, is watching them and letting them be who they are. Like, I talk to them a lot of times about stuff like that. I just let them be, like you said. I learned that. I think what made me learn that is when I started acting, because I'm like, I'm already doing something out of the norm. So it put me in a mindset to almost don't judge your kids, because if that makes sense, like how you said, like just
100%.
Yeah, because I'm doing something out of the norm. So I'm like, whatever you want to do or however you acting, like you said, like, trying not to mold you. It's like, I'm doing something out of the norm. I can never tell you who to be, you know, I can support you and be there for you, but I can never tell you who to be. So I think once I started doing chasing acting and stuff, that kind of went into my parenting too, because I didn't look at them in a traditional way, if that makes sense. You told me you wanted to be an astronaut that drive race cars. I didn't laugh at you. You know what I mean? I'd just be like, all right, I'm going
to
teach you.
What do we got to do to get you there?
You want me to teach you how to drive now? So it made me, like, back to what you said, it made me just look at them as that, like that.
Yeah. Just said something that triggered me. When you started acting, you started, would you say, thriving more as a parent?
I think
there's something to that, because I think once you start doing what gives you purpose and what you feel is good, you're able to start parenting in a better way.
Yeah, I did, because what it does, like, I tell people, like, you're acting, like, because a lot of people think, and I see celebrities say this all the time, I'm not doing it for the money and stuff. Like, I get that, because what happened was, when you do something you love, it makes sense you are happier. When you, but like I said, I became a better parent, because when I'm acting, I'm actually doing something I love. So it makes me love myself, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Because you know how a job is. I hate this job. Guess how the rest of your day going?
Now
you
hate the rest of my day.
Yeah, I hate the rest of my day. Now you're like almost living in victim mode, because I hate my job. And it's one of the things where you don't love yourself, and it clearly shows. And I don't think men talk about it. You know, and it's a lot of, even when I see documentaries about how people say their dads hated them, like sometimes they might have hated themselves. If I do a job that I hate, it makes me feel less of a person. It makes me hate myself. And then that just shows, like I said, it shows and everything. So it definitely did. It made me happier with myself. So that's why I work out. Like, it makes me happy with myself. If I'm happy, I can be a better friend, a better everything. So yeah.
So there, aligning passion with purpose is a really big thing for me. I would encourage anybody who listens to this podcast to follow DeAndre's advice on doing what you love, because it's going to have the utmost effect on the rest of your lives.
Yeah. And you don't realize how much, I didn't mean to cut you off, but you don't realize how much it affects people around you. I mean, as I'm talking to you, I just thought about it, because you just project, you start hating your life. So you start hating the people around you. And I tell people all the time too, because I talk to people all the time, and it's also what you want to do. Don't look at me. You know what I mean? Like, I tell people, if you want to be a manager at McDonald's,
do that.
Yeah, that's what I said. Because people
always do it with passion.
Yeah, exactly. Because people always come to me with the, I'm not saying don't do it, but they come to me like they're thinking, no, if you want to be a manager, you want to go to school. If you want to be a dad, because that's a goal. Just do it. Like you said, do it and love it. That's success.
I can't tell you how many times I fell into the pit, because all of a sudden, when it didn't close out the way I wanted it to, my kids saw a completely different parent in me. Yes. And I think somewhere passion didn't align with purpose, right?
Yeah.
And there's balance
somewhere.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, you can have a good month every month in sales if you really try hard and do a good job.
Yeah.
You can have a really good month being the manager at McDonald's.
Yeah.
if you really try hard and it's what you want to do, yep. if you want to manage people, you can have a really good job day in life and find balance and being a cashier. Yeah. If that's what you want to do. Yeah, yeah. But aligning passion with your purpose is important. Right? Yeah. So if you like being outside and you like doing like lifting things up and moving things around yeah. and getting your hands in the dirt, don't go work in a warehouse, man.
Yeah.
Find a landscaping job. Exactly. You know what I mean? Yeah. Find out what drives you and do that. And then the rest of your life becomes so much better and your children thrive from yeah. that.
And I think we're living in a time now where it's like easier to decide if you want to do something, do it. I just think so many people have, like you said, like they have you can do it, but so many people think it's like, you got to be the craziest thing. If you want to do something, like you said, if you want to play in dirt, man, get your landscaping job. Like, let's just do it. So, no, I agree with you completely, man.
Yeah.
And another thing, too, is understand, too, even when things not going good, you got to smile when it's not going good. Like I was saying, like, when you didn't have a good month, like, it shows. And it's when life with anybody.
So I worked, there was a job I did. It would, like, people were so negative, man. They were being so negative, and my customers were like, hey, it's not good. So it just feels like these people are just negative. And what it was a bunch of people sitting in a room making phone calls. Mm-hmm. And they were really, I think they were bored when they came into work. They didn't think that it, like, their job had purpose or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I went and I got a mirror and I put that in front of those people. And I was like, I want you to look at yourself when you call other folks and I want you to smile. And if you're smiling, they're going to feel that on the other yeah. side. So I was like, hey, just feel good doing yeah. your job. I don't know if you got what you got to do inside your head, but all I want you to do is smile yeah. when you talk to people. Yeah. And if you smile, you're going to make something's going to happen. Yeah. With it. So they started doing it. So they're looking in these mirrors every day and they're smiling. Yeah. And then I go back and I check with the customers and I'm talking to them and they're like, I don't know what you did, but it worked.
Yeah. Energy, it is like, man. Cause smile, you can law of attraction. All that. Sometimes you have to trick the body. Like that smile makes you positive energy. You know what I mean? Like
it's contagious.
Yeah. Too. Yeah. Sometimes you have to, sometimes you got to do it. So now. That's a great tactic, man. That's pretty dope. I did some crazy. I worked a lot of places too, though. So like, I did a lot of crazy jobs.
Yeah,
yeah.
I did a telemarketing job once. It was man, it was hard. Hello, would you like to buy cell phones? Hello, would you like to buy?
Hang up on you.
Like, yeah, yeah.
I think the hardest job I ever did was like delivering drywall. That sounds easy, but like it was like in the wintertime. You got to think about it. When you deliver drywall, the building is not together, so you delivering like in the 0 degrees. And then like
it's, with wind,
yeah, and it's drywall, so it's like super heavy, and like the structure's not there yet, so you just in the cold, man. That sucks so bad, man. It sounds easy,
but for somebody who doesn't like dealing with people, that might be great.
Yeah, yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. No, man, I just didn't like the cold.
No, I hear you. I hear you. I hate the cold. I don't know why we live in Iowa. There's nothing guarding us from the wind, and it's sharp. So, what keeps you smiling every day?
I think what's keeping me smiling, my kids, man. I know I keep saying that, man, but. Having a newborn and just having kids in general, they just keep me going. I know I keep saying that, but I think it's my kids, man. Yeah. And my kids and helping and hoping I can motivate somebody, man. That too, because I get a lot of messages and stuff about because of you or like I did this or I applied for this job. So I love to give back. But see, I like to tell people I love to give back mentally. Some people donate to charity. I donate mentally. I love to do that. And I don't even
create space for people.
Yeah. You know how many people I tell that you can do this, apply for that job and they write me. So I love to, I think my purpose, like helping people, having that voice to help people, everything I've been through. And that's why I think God wanted me to act. It's not about being in front of the camera. It's about when they try to see who's in front of the camera and they go see my backstory and be like, oh dang. It's just basically a platform. God gave me a platform to tell you who I am.
Yeah.
Cause if I would have never started acting, if I was working, I would just, my life story would be compared to being buried. It would just be in a box in the ground because of the acting. It grew and everybody got to see it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So I think acting, this God just wanted me to tell you my story. Now you know my story because I had the exposure. So just making people happy, things like that. Because I get a lot of messages of people like, yeah. So I think it was just God and TV screen just to show me to people who needed to see me. So
yeah. You definitely have a positive energy about you. You got to tell me how you got into acting and before we wrap this up.
My first movie role was crazy. It sounded fake. So this is what happened. I was at the gym. At the time I was living in Waterloo, I was at the gym. And every day I go, I seen this guy, right? It sounds fake, but it's true. I seen this guy, he was working out. He kept talking to me every day. I'm like, what does this guy want? Like, why is he talking to me? It was like weird. And then he kept talking to me. This was before my mom and brother died. It was like 2017. So I didn't have the guards up already. So like, he kept talking to me. And then as I got to know him, became friends with him. Man, I'm from Chicago. I'm here just casting I make movies. And I got to know him. And then it's like, I'm going to put you in the movie. And then I got to know him and stuff, and then I was like, I still don't believe it. He sent me a script and like stuff like that. That's how it happened. I did my first movie in Chicago. Just from going to the gym, I met a guy. Like, he was talking to people. I think some people just blowing him off, but not knowing, like, treating people good. Because I treated him well and talked to him and didn't blow him off, I got to know him. He ended up being a casting person. He made movies.
That's wild. Yeah. Squid Games?
Yep, Squid Games. Yep, 81 on Squid Game. It's still the top show. If you go on Netflix right now, it's still on a popular show. So, yeah.
I'm going to turn it on after you leave. I haven't watched it yet, so I'm very curious. Yeah,
I know that sounds like I honestly haven't watched it. Like, people send me pictures of me and stuff, but I haven't watched it yet. I don't know why, man. Like, do you listen to yourself?
No, I hate it. I hate listening to the sound of my own voice. Do you struggle from that as well?
Yeah, I don't watch myself. No.
But you've done some commercials. Yeah.
Yep, I just did a commercial, Honda commercial. They're just getting ready to come out. Yep, a Honda commercial and things like that. Yep.
Sweet, man.
Yeah, man.
Sweet. Awesome. I got to put you on the spot a little bit. Do you have any words of advice or just motivational quotes that you live by?
Yeah, man. I think my best thing I live by is live in the moment, but don't, if that makes sense. When I say that, meaning you ever get a flat tire and you feel like it's the end of the world? I always tell people, like, live in the moment about it, deal with it, but always try to think about somebody's going through something worse. Because, like, sometimes I think a lot of people, we feel like everything is the end of the world. You get a breakup, you get a flat tire, it's the end of the world. I tell people, if you think of somebody going through something worse, you find gratitude in what you're going through. And then I think that's what I mean by that. Because sometimes it takes you about how bad someone got to realize how good you got it. And you got to do that to make you continue. Because what happened is you can live in a victim mode, or like that simple flat tire. There's people who have the rest of the day is bad because they just putting out their energy because they're like, my tire's flat, stuff like that. If you think about somebody that got it, if you get a flat tire, think about somebody that don't have a car, I guarantee you, you'd rather have a flat tire. Yeah, you'll be smiling. That's what I mean. And you'll be smiling fixing that tire. So live in the moment, but don't. And it sounds like crazy, but that's what I mean by that.
Yeah.
If you think about, you get a flat tire, if you think about a guy that's walking, you're going to be like, oh, I'm going to fix this flat tire. Play with a smile.
Yes.
So that's what I mean by it. So, like, just think like that and you appreciate what you got. Because a lot of times we don't do that when something bad. And I say when stuff bad happens, That's one of my things. Man. Just keep going. Just gratitude. Think about what you have and what you didn't have at one point, and that'll keep you going. Because I guarantee you'll start to enjoy what you got. So
yeah, right on. With that, I thank you.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. All right, bro.
If you're hearing this message, you've listened to the entire episode, and for that, I want to thank you with all my heart. I hope you enjoyed it, and if you did, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It really helps us out. If you have questions about getting sober, parenting, or personal growth, email nick@domesticdadproject.com with any questions about cleaning up the messes you've made. And if your question is discussion worthy, we'll feature it in an upcoming episode. Don't forget, you can watch any of these videos uncut and unedited, filmed in my studio from our YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube and search for Domestic Dad Project. Also, please follow us on Facebook or share this episode on your social media. You can also join our community by grabbing some merch. It means the world to me to know that this podcast is making a difference in someone's life. And if this episode inspired you to get sober or simply become a better version of yourself, you can claim your free 60-minute coaching session by visiting www.domesticdadproject.com. Let's continue supporting each other to break the stigma around dads reaching out for help, to get our lives on track while navigating the obstacles of fatherhood. Until next time, keep cleaning up the mess.